What I can say is that I met Larry actually through another ACE member. I really appreciate Evan's not here this morning, but he did join us for dinner last night. It was a great introduction. I met Larry on probably the coldest day in Boston last winter, and managed to find my way through the Green Line, which I hadn't been on, I think, since I was much younger, high school. And they added stops. It took longer. it's a bigger place. But I met Larry at his office out in Newton. We had a most exciting, intriguing, extended discussion over lunch. And the reason I went there was not to recruit him to speak at ACE, but it was an introduction to help with another project. Partway through the conversation, it was clear that he had some really exciting, interesting, foundational kinds of insights that I thought would be great to share with all of you. So we found a time and a place. I'll say a couple of things. Is that I don't know whether he ever packed his CAD habit yet, but he did go to that university and got his doctorate there. He works with the MIT Sloan School. He's very involved in entrepreneurship. He is absolutely passionate about the work he's done, and that's evolved over the years. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Larry Stiebel, and he can tell you anything more he wants to about himself, and I won't edit what he says.
Thank you so much, Jeff. No need to take notes. I've got a recording device. I'm going to be making an MP3 of this recording. And if any of you would like a copy of the recording and a copy of the PowerPoints, just give me your business cards at the conclusion. I'll be glad to send it to you. The talk is Fake It Till You Make It and Calm Assertive Leadership. Before we start, let me ask you to do an exercise that you will not share with anybody else. I'd like you to take out a piece of paper, and I'd like you to name a person that greatly inspired you in your professional life. Somebody who was very significant to you in making you become the professional you are today.
Negative or positive?
Positive. Very good point. Very good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. Very good point. Positive. A positive role model for you. A positive leader for you. And again, this is not to be shared with anybody else. Just put it down. Objectives, we're going to be talking about the origins of calm assertive leadership, and it's tied to neurobiology, psycholinguistics, and I show you some very easy exercises that you could do that hopefully will not only increase your sales, but also increase your ability to sell higher level stuff. So that's the objective today. The first sort of trend is my own practice. I've got a 35-year-old consulting firm called Stiebel Peabody. Focus is leadership and career success. About a third of our business focuses on retained search, like Jay does. And our focus is boards, CEOs, CFOs, anything that touches the board of directors. We do global searches. And then after the person's there, we also are there for the next 18 months providing coaching. So it's a hybrid of coaching and search at the same time. And I noticed, since I'm dealing with people and how they're presenting themselves in job interviews, and then how they are dealing with new situations and new jobs, that there seemed to be a thread about those people who are successful and those people who are not going to make it. But I couldn't put my finger on exactly what it was, except I could tell. And when you're in this business, you can tell, and you know what I'm talking about. By the way, this is an Ideas to Action program. If any of you are inspired by this talk and want to do something about it and actually turn some of these ideas into action for your practice, I'm available for up to 1 hour free telephone consultation. Your stakeholders, these are your clients, these are your potential clients. They crave something from you. Are you providing it to them? And it's calm, assertive leadership. That's what they want from you. That's what they need from you. We're going to be talking about it, but the first inspiration came from television. Cesar Millan, The Dog Whisperer. How many of you have ever seen The Dog Whisperer? Okay. So, tell us, what is The Dog Whisperer about?
Well, he goes in and works with presumably troubled animals, but it really turns out almost all the time to be the owners of the animals.
Exactly.
All freaking out, and then the
dogs. Right. The show is The Dog Whisperers, but he's not working with dogs. He's working with the owners of the dogs. And that's the interesting part of the show. He's really a psychologist. And what he is saying is that dogs are pack animals. And what they're looking for from their owners is calm, assertive leadership. He coined the term calm, assertive leadership. And if you're too calm, the dog says, well, there's no leader around. I guess that's me. And then there's all sorts of problems. If you're too assertive, you're freaking the dog out. And so how do you be both calm and assertive at the same time? And if you ever watch any of his shows, he is a role model for that in terms of how he presents himself, how he presents the problems, how he acts with his body. So that was the first idea. The second idea was a research article that I read. It's called Leadership Equals Communications. And it was written by some people in Europe. They looked at 279 employees in one company. And they had a theory that people who were charismatic leaders got more work out of their teams than people who were task-oriented. You know, Steve has been teaching this for years. So is there a difference between people-oriented leaders versus task-oriented leaders? They find no, there wasn't. The real difference was the employees that perceive their leaders as precise in feedback but also providing emotional support did the best. Calm, assertive leadership. So first was my clinical observations in my work. The second was the Cesar Millan show on TV. The third was this article. And the again, when we're looking at commissar, this is probably the role model that I have in mind. Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. I mean, we were so blessed by having him as the leader. And of course, when he wasn't on stage, being calm and assertive, he was actually quite depressed. But he managed to hide that quite well. This is another example of a calm, assertive leader. Let's say you have a significant operation to do, and you're going to a surgeon. What are you expecting of that surgeon? If the surgeon says, well, you know, all I can tell you is I'll do my best. you're gonna. On the other hand, if you come to me and I say, no problem, I guarantee you results. Are you gonna feel calm, or are you gonna be frightened? Anybody lived in Texas for a while? I lived in Texas, and there's a phrase, I guarantee you. It's going to work out. Well, anybody who tells me, I guarantee you, you know, I start reaching for my wallet and backing out. So that's too assertive. It's not calm. Here's what I want from my surgeon. You know, this is a risky procedure, and all procedures have risks. Based on my experience and also the published literature, I believe there's an 80 to 85% chance of success. How many of you have ever heard that a statement like that from a surgeon? Okay, again, that's a calm, assertive statement. Here's Rush. I'm not making a political statement, but Rush is a model of the assertive leader, and that he sort of comes across bombastic and full of negative energy. You know, this is outrageous. You know, this is unpatriotic. It's terrible. And if you agree with him, you get this rush of negative energy. And if you disagree with him, you say, "Oh, this guy's weird." How many of you have ever worked for somebody like that? Okay, so that's assertive without being calm. Here's calm without being assertive. This is actor Wally Cox. But again, to somebody who just, everybody sort of rolls over. How many have ever worked with somebody like that? Again, not to be making this, so this is an unpolitical thing. Lewis Black is how many of you know Lewis Black, the comedian? So he's got this shtick, which is wonderful. He'll be calm, 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 and then assertive, right? Calm, 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 and then assertive. You know what I'm talking about in this show? How many of you have ever worked with somebody like that? They're just this, and then boom, 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 boom. So that's assertive without being calm. Because what happens is every time they're calm, you're waiting for the next outburst. So you could look at this as a graph. Here's a scale of 0 to 10, and I'd like you to take that sheet of paper. And on 0 is you're calm, but you're not assertive. 10 is you're assertive, but not calm. How would you describe yourself today on a 0 to 10 scale? And then on a 0 to 10 scale, what would you like to be? So 0 is you're calm, but not assertive. 10 is you're assertive but not calm. Describe yourself from a 0 to 10 scale today, and what do you want to be and need to be for your practice? Raise your hand when you're finished so I know. Okay. I would hope that maybe within the next 3 weeks, you could get a 10% improvement on your score. And so now you've measured it, you've written it down. Now you can have a goal. So how are we going to get there? The first is scripting, and this is something that is not only to deal with you as individuals, but something that you can work on with your client companies. We have scripts every day. I remember the first time when I was a little kid flying in an airplane and the flight attendants started going through their safety precautions, and I was listening intently to what they had to say, and I said, it's amazing that they know all this. And today I don't listen to it at all because it's a script. But the idea of an organization providing a script and everybody has to read the script provides consistency and reliability. How many of you have ever gone to a doctor and somebody's taking your blood pressure or they're going to give you an injection and they see your card and they say, what's your name again? Even though they got the, how many of you have ever had that? How many of you have ever been to a hospital and they say, are you safe in your home? How many of you have ever had that? That's a script. Everybody gets it. And then once you understand that's a script, you relax. You know, you understand what's going on. It provides consistency, reliability from a system-wide basis. Everybody's saying the same thing. So you can script for calm, assertive leadership. Walgreens is starting to do that. How many of you have ever gone to Walgreens and somebody says, welcome to Walgreens? How many of you have ever had that experience? Okay, you know, the first time I went in, I thought, oh, I must be really special. But now that I come in and I get the same thing every time in the same way, and I know everybody, it's comforting. It's consistent. The value of scripts and mandating scripts is it's predictable, it's impersonal. And it's an explicit statement of corporate values. You don't have to agree with this. You just have to say it. And you have to say it to everybody. Excuse me. Oops. Now, what should be in the script? I'm going to tell you a story. This is a picture of General Eisenhower, who was the commander of D-Day and also President of the United States. And the person next to him is John Foster Dulles, the Secretary of State during the Eisenhower administration. According to a book that I was reading, John Foster Dulles was recommending that the United States covertly go into a South American country and overthrow the duly elected president. This was not Cuba. It was another country. And Eisenhower had a meeting with John Foster Dulles and said, if we don't overthrow this person, what's the chance of our interest being harmed? He says 100%. Okay. And if we do attempt this overthrow, what's the chance of success? He says 60%. And Eisenhower smiled and said, okay, let's do it. And then he said to John Foster Dulles, if you had said 100% chance of success, I wouldn't have done it. And I kept thinking about that and said, you know, that makes sense. Man like Eisenhower is comfortable at the 60% level. And there's actually some research that most entrepreneurs are comfortable at the 60 to 75% level. If it's like 90% chance of success, most entrepreneurs are not that interested. It's kind of boring. If, on the other hand, if it's 30% or less chance of success, most entrepreneurs aren't interested. It's too risky. You know, real entrepreneurs don't take excessive risks. Novice entrepreneurs do, but real entrepreneurs don't. And what I found was, if you want to create scripts for your companies and you want to create scripts for yourself, start talking like a weatherman. If I was making a weather broadcast today, and look at the weather out there. It's sunny. It's cool. I would say there's a 90% chance of sun. I mean, come on. I'm looking out there. It's sun. Why am I saying 90% chance? Because I know enough about the world that and Maine that, you know, it could snow before this day is out. And I want to cover my ass. I don't want to look like a jerk. So I'm going to give you a probability statement which expresses my concern. It's the same as when you go to a surgeon. And the surgeon says, I think there's an 80 to 85% chance this will be successful. And then your reaction is to be calm. And I think that most of us are comfortable in the 75 to 85% range. People like Eisenhower are comfortable in the 60% range, but not many people are like Eisenhower. Most of us are in the 75 to 85% range. If I say it's 100% chance of success or your money back, you're not going to believe me. If I say I'll do the best I can, you're not going to want to deal with me. So if you can express things in terms of probability, this is a complex project. You know, you want to get a you want to be energy self-sufficient on your farm. I can't promise you we can do this, but based on my experience with other projects of similar complexity, I think there's an 85% chance we will be successful. I think what you'll find is people will calm down and trust you more. So I'd like you to take out a piece of paper and think about something that you could, today's Friday, think about Monday morning. Some person you could be talking to, some potential prospect you could be talking with, where you could express something as a probability statement. You want to write a book? Well, provided that you present me with a manuscript that we can work on, I believe there's an 85% chance that we can have something that would be self-published and sold on Amazon.com. You want something published by a major publishing house, I'm sorry, but the odds are going to be considerably less. What probability statement could you be making? And by the way, if you're a company looking for funding and you're talking to private equity people, they deal with this all the time. They understand that 90% of their investments will not work out. They think in terms of probability all the time. So when you say there's 100%, it's a guaranteed success, they immediately discount what you said. Yep.
Are you suggesting that, so I have a client that I'm going to be talking to Monday morning and
yep.
promising her that I'm going to get something to the printer by the end of the day. This I know. Are you suggesting that instead of saying, yes, I'll have that done, that we instead say that we interject this percentage of likelihood?
Well, if it's something that very tactically and you're not trying to, what you just said was you're conveying a fact.
Well, it's not, though. I mean, if she doesn't do her end, then I won't have it to the printer by the end of the day. So I could say...
Oh, okay, fine, fine.
So you're suggesting that we actually bring up this percentage...
Yeah.
...as a way of phrasing...
Right.
Okay.
It's great in a sales process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where somebody says, can I believe you? Can I believe in you? And again, instead of saying, I guarantee this is going to work, to sort of say, based on my experience of having consulted with other organizations of equal complexity, of equal size, I think, assuming from based on what I know, I think there's an 85% chance we could improve your communications. It's calm and yet assertive.
Well. Yeah. I'm dying to get your take on this, Larry.
Sure.
Because I, having done a lot of searches myself,
okay,
you don't know what you don't know. So when you entertain an opportunity to fill a position,
right,
where there are many moving parts, why would you want to step in an area where you haven't done your homework on really looking at the data to determine your viability in being their solution?
I have to answer that at two levels.
Okay.
Well, one level is if your level of confidence is, below 60% that you can actually pull it off, then maybe you ought not to be selling it, or you need to be selling it in partnership with somebody whose level of confidence is 85%, and then you leverage off that person. That's one response. The second response is, hey, you're a consultant. I said, fake it until you become it. How many people have in this room have had the experience of a potential client says, I need this, can you do this? And you've never done it before, and you said, I'll fake it and yeah. We'll make it happen. How many of you have done that? Sure. Hey, welcome to consulting. if you actually would only sell things until you actually proved to yourself you could do that, you'd starve to death. I'm talking about communications. What are you communicating to customers? The title is fake it until you become it. Yes. I think if I say you're looking for a board member, based on what I've heard, I think there's an 85 to 90% chance I can get you the person you want. When I say that, I mean that I've got it because I've got the experience. If you say it, you may be faking it, but at some point it'll become real. But right now you gotta sell it. And that's what I'm saying. Put it another way, I'm actually asking you to be more conservative, because if your choice, if I'm the customer and I'm saying, can you do a board search for me, and you've never done a board search, you either have to turn it down, or you have to say, of course I can, which means you just said there's 100% chance I can do that. My suggestion actually tones it down a little more. That make sense?
Yep.
Sir.
Two quick examples. When I had a total shoulder replacement, and they told me what they were going to have to do, I don't like getting a splinter out, and I was a little concerned about them removing bone and putting in prosthesis.
Yeah.
So I said, I don't think I want to do this. And he says, well, here's the stats. 85%, we're going to be able to get most of your motion back. If you don't do it, 100%, you will be a cripple in your left arm. Which do you prefer? A great alternative choice, close, right? So I said, okay, we'll go with the 85. And then this company that I'm working with right now, there was another sales rep who was up against them. And he said, we're going to increase your sales. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And he says, what are you going to do? I said, you heard the old 80-20 rule? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, break it down even more. Top 20% are going to continue to improve. They're going to do well. The middle 60%, some will improve, some won't. Your bottom 20%, they have 1 foot in the door and 1 foot out, are going to probably stay right where they are. I says, but the increase that you're going to get on your top 20%, you know, and I know, will make up more than even the middle 60%. He goes, thank you.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yep.
Calm and assertive.
Yep.
Any other issues, questions, concerns? All right. So this is the idea of using probability statements as parts of scripts allows you to sell more effectively. That's number one. But secondly, you can institutionalize it in your companies and recommend that your clients institutionalize it. Everybody's going to say the same thing. These are scripts that I use. I usually say, so let's say it's a search. I don't do all kinds of searches. I just do board searches, CEO searches, CFO searches. That's it. So if somebody, I will usually say, of course, we think we're the best for what we do. But if you tell us what you're looking for and we don't think we're going to be the best, we'll refer you to somebody else. And I don't say that because I'm being altruistic. I say that because we want a good long-term relationship with you. I'm asking them to calm down. Because they see me as the seller, they see themselves as a buyer, they're concerned I'm trying to foist myself on them. So this is a script. I use the script all the time. This is extraordinarily powerful. Extraordinarily powerful. And that is basic rephrasing and summarizing what somebody said. Because I think existentially most of your customers are concerned, did she really hear me? Does she really understand me? And so, again, it's a script that I will use in every sales process. This is, let me summarize what I just heard you say in my own words to make sure I've got it. I will summarize it. You'll say, yeah, that's right, you got it. And again, that's designed to help calm him that I really listened. Basic 101, but it's a script. Everybody does it. Everybody says the same thing. Let me summarize what I just heard you say in my words. Make sure I understand what your needs are. Do I? Fine, then I can proceed. Script. So write down a script that you might want to do Monday morning. Something you might say, something you might do, something you could do over and over again, so, or a script that you might recommend to your clients that they do Monday morning, 8 o'clock. When you're finished, raise your hands, please. Okay. And again, I'll be glad to work with you individually for up to an hour on the phone if you want to talk it through. Anybody want to read their scripts? Anybody? Sure.
So I'm going to be going out to bookstores and talking about a relationship, and so what I had was, I'll work with you to help promote and sell my book.
Okay. Isn't that a script that you currently do?
I'm just starting that phase, so I hadn't thought of it, so I appreciate you raising it.
Okay. Okay. How about something like this? If we work together, I think there is a 70% chance we can increase your sales of this book relative to just putting it on the shelf. As a matter of fact, given what bookstores are actually selling, you probably could say they probably have a baseline measure. You could probably go to 80%. Because if you're going to be actually working with them to help them, that's more than what they got. Again, the more you can use numbers and percentages and probabilities, the idea is calm, assertive. Again, this gets into our recruiting. It's something that anybody who does recruiting can use. When we're looking to hire calm, assertive leaders, we have certain reference questions that we ask. One is, give me an example of how this candidate has acted during a crisis when things are not going well. Tell me a story. Second is, give me an example of how the candidate expresses himself or herself when the candidate's ideas are not necessarily popular. Tell me a story. And again, we will ask the same thing of every reference. That gives us a sense of their ability to be calm and assertive. Setting up performance appraisal standards in corporations for calm assertiveness. You could use this as one of the factors. The employee expresses ideas in probability statements. Zero is never, 10 is always. Employees paraphrase the ideas of others. Zero is never, 10 is always. Employee conveys a sense of being calm. Zero is never, 10 is always. If you want something as a corporation, you've got to be willing to pay for it. If you're willing to pay for it, you've got to be willing to measure it. These are ways that you can measure it. Again, these PowerPoints are available to you. Just give me your business cards. Fake it till you become it. Compensation. Many years ago, I was working for a compensation consulting firm, and we did a wonderful study looking at high technology companies of a certain size, all public companies, and then we counted the number of women who were vice presidents. And it was very easy. Those companies with the most female vice presidents were those companies where the board of directors had at least 1% of bonus tied to promotion of women and minorities. 1%. Why? Because CEOs are personal wealth machines. At the end of the day, they're looking to maximize their personal wealth. And if the board says, this is so important, we will give up to X percent for you to do this, that is a signal that this is important and they're willing to pay for it. If the company's not willing to pay for it, it's just a nice idea. It's about as complicated as that. If you want more of that something, you got to be willing to pay for it. I've showed you some steps of how you can measure it. But the big issue here is it's not the amount of money, it's the percentage of, even if it's just 1%, it's going to mean something. So, try to express confidence in percentages, then hold people accountable, use paraphrasing, script yourself. Now, let's look at the next phase. Any questions about this before we move on? All right, why don't you stand up and stretch? You've been sitting for too long. Stand up and stretch. All right, sit down. You're having too much fun. There are two chemicals I'd like to discuss with you this morning. One is called testosterone, and yes, women have testosterone levels as well. And testosterone is usually associated with high degrees of arousal in males, but it's also associated with a sense of well-being and sense of confidence. The next level, a chemical I'd like to introduce you to, is cortisol. And cortisol is secreted by the endocrine gland, and it tells you there is danger. How many of you have ever been in a situation and something happens and you are in threat and you can feel the hairs of your arms, you feel the back of your neck getting cool? You can't see it, but your eyes have just dilated. How many of you have ever been in that situation? Okay, that is your body filled with cortisol, and your body is now ready to what? For those of you who took biology 101, fight or flight.
There's also a freeze.
Hmm?
Fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah.
Freeze.
So. So here's a takeaway from this morning. Guess what? The body is complicated. And the feedback mechanisms in the body go multiple channels at the same time. So it is not the case that the brain says, oh, this guy's a threat. Let's pour some cortisol into Larry Stiebel's blood. And then he's ready to fight or flee. It's more complicated that way. I can manipulate through my body a message to my brain that says, oh, Larry's standing in a certain way. There's got to be a reason he's standing in a certain way. Oh, he's probably triumphant or very confident. Let me pour some testosterone into the bloodstream. So the feedback, so the mechanisms are complicated. You can manipulate your brain into secreting certain hormones. For more information, I suggest you look at Amy Cuddy's research at Harvard University. And she gave a TED Talk, which is a fabulous TED Talk. It's one of the most popular TED Talks ever. But I'm going to be summarizing some of her research. This is a typical stance when people have won things. They have their arms outstretched. Look, their neck is somewhat back, and their mouth is open. In other words, what they're doing is they're increasing the size of their body in space. This is a sign of triumph. This is a sign of triumph, right? The winner. This is a sign of triumph. Can there be any doubt that that's a sign of triumph? Another sign of triumph. Again, how many of you have watched a football game and when the touchdown is made, this is the is how many of you have seen this? It's universal. As a matter of fact, Massachusetts has something called the Special Olympics. And part of the Special Olympics is they have blind people running around a track. And when somebody who's born congenitally blind, who's never seen anybody in their life, crosses the finish line and they feel the tape measure break and they know they've won, what do? This. It is the symbol for triumph. So, based on Amy Cuddy's research, if you did this for 2 minutes, then your brain would say, why is my body doing this? Must have done something good. So let me increase the testosterone level in the blood. This is another example of where somebody's trying to make themselves smaller than they are. Here's another example of trying to make somebody make themselves smaller in space. This is a classic pose where every you're shielding every possible vulnerable body part. You're shielding your genitals, you're shielding your neck. If you sit like that for long enough, your body's saying, I wonder why she's sitting this way. Must be some danger. Let me increase more cortisol in her bloodstream. Which then creates the self-fulfilling prophecy. Again, the brain operates on feedback mechanisms both ways at the same time. Here's an example of how I have used this in my practice. I'm going to make a sales call to the president of a company about doing some leadership coaching. I'm a good salesman, as you are. I arrive at the meeting 20 minutes before the scheduled time, right? I'm sitting, I'm in my car in the parking lot with 20 minutes to spare because I'm only going to walk in the door at the right time. So what do? Because I'm conscientious, I start checking my emails. I realize I'm now putting my body in a posture like this. I'm in the car, I've got my arms close, looking at doing this. I've got my legs close together like this. So according to Amy Cuddy's research, what I am telling my brain to do is to increase cortisol in my bloodstream and reduce testosterone. Which is exactly what I should not be doing. So I get out of the car, I go to the president's office, I ask the president's assistant, is there a bathroom I could use? Thankfully, there was nobody there. I stand before the mirror and I go, can you imagine how embarrassing that would have been if the president had walked in the bathroom when I'm standing like this, you know? He probably said, wow, if that's his attitude about taking a pee, wow. So I did this for 2 minutes. Walked in the president's office. We were talking about one coaching assignment. He asked me what my fee was. I gave him a fee 15% higher than what I was planning to give. I walked out of there with three assignments. What I like to think I did was I manipulated I manipulated my brain into thinking, why is Larry standing like that? He must have done something good. So increasing the level of testosterone decreased the level of cortisol. Now, I did this in front of a bathroom mirror, but I could have gone into a toilet stall and done that just as well. So if your spouse asks you tonight, what did you learn? Say, I learned how to go to a toilet stall before I make a sales call. What are the implications? You can fake it. I've asked you to give scripts. I didn't ask you to believe it. I'm looking for you to recruit a director. I'm not asking you to believe you can. I'm just asking you to say you can. I'm asking you to basically manipulate your brain into secreting testosterone. I'm not asking you to secrete testosterone. I'm asking you to manipulate it. Avoid postures that simulate cortisol. That's particularly important for women. And engage in postures that simulate testosterone. Again, because the nature of those postures involve expansion of your body in space, you probably want to do it in a private setting, like a toilet stall.
Third?
Yep.
How much time, typically?
2 minutes. Okay. That's all. And again, because of scripting, you know, I don't know if you have a checklist of things that you do, but if you came away from this morning to say, well, that's a good idea, and you don't put it on a checklist of things to do, it ain't going to get done. You know, for those of you who've ever observed pilots as just before takeoff, they have a checklist of things that they must do. So maybe part of your checklist and part of is saying, go to someplace private, and then do this is called power posing. Yep.
And I just add to that when you're in sales,
One way is to add to your script is to have a trigger word and an that you kind of anchored to a good feeling. I know some people that actually like put their briefcase in their trunk, and so they go into the trunk. They open up the trunk because they have to get their briefcase out before they go on a call. And as they slam the trunk shut, they say to themselves, "Show's on," and that means flip that switch and get yourself into that
right.
mood, and it just kind of triggers the whole thing. So. Part of our routine is put into a script, you give your own trigger word, and off you go.
Yep.
Show's on.
That's right. You don't have to believe it, you just have to do it. So, any questions?
Yeah.
Yep.
How long does that last? Because, I mean, like anything. Because, I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, depending upon where you are in your business cycle, you know, you're in that prospecting mode. So, I mean, do you get to go to the touchdown pose every 15 minutes?
Yeah, every phone call.
Self-management.
It,
I mean, you've given yourself the power pose. It's
going to
last as long as you want it to last.
So there's subjectivity to that, essentially.
Nothing lasts forever. And again, and again, there are two things I've been discussing. One is neurobiology, and since we are dealing with chemicals in the bloodstream, it is not going to last. Number two, certain things in life you can anticipate what's going to happen next. You knew this morning you were coming to this place. You knew you were going to be here at 7:30. You knew you're going to be talking about your business with people who have perhaps the ability to refer work to you. So you could have gone to the men's room or the ladies' room. You could have gone around to the back. You could have do that the next month that you're here. That's a predictable thing to do. Sometimes it's unpredictable. So for example, if you have an office and you know you're going to have a difficult meeting, yes, you could close the door and do this for 2 minutes before you meet the person.
I'm thinking too, if you have positive results, those are going to give you the testosterone energy or the good energy to keep going.
Right.
You know, it sort of starts a pattern going the right
way. Yeah. Again, it's called feedback.
Yes. Right.
And you know what's new? We all of us in this room deal with complex open systems. So why is the body any different?
And I would just add that talking about the cortisol piece, that when you have somebody that's in front of you, it's working on them also. So if you have somebody that is in this pose and you know that they put themselves in defensive mode and then they have that cortisol running through them, they're not going to listen to you. So if you're standing trying to sell them and you see them, you have to get them out of that to release and get their cortisol levels down. And the best way to do that, does anybody know what the best way to do that? If you see somebody like this and they won't listen to you until they start to break that. The best way is to hand them something and they have to reach out to take it. And it breaks their body of this.
And here's another way, particularly on a beautiful day like today. Let's say you and I are talking and you're like this. I'll say, you know, it's too nice to be indoors. Come on, let's go for a walk. And in my office, you went to, near my office, there's a path that goes by river. It's all green, it's peaceful. And what I find is that if people are not looking at me, and they're not in this power pose, but they're walking with me, they often tell me more than what they were planning to tell me. I mean, the stereotype is Sigmund Freud putting somebody on the couch with, and then the psychoanalyst is at the head, so you know, that whole paraphernalia. That actually, the issue was, get the person more comfortable by having the therapist out of sight. But you don't need a couch for that. You can just say, come on, let's go for a walk. And they will calm down. They won't be doing this. And this allows this is a more comfortable way of doing things, particularly for a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
Plus, you're standing side by side.
Yeah.
And since we are focusing on collaborating, right, it's like you're a partner and a co-equal, so
right,
not as threatening.
Yep.
To Denise's point, we could say, let's stand up and raise our hands over our head.
But you're also, when you're engaged in this, it isn't just about the body chemicals and the blood flow and all of that. You, as the professional that you are in I'm going to say, humanistic type field, and you're matching human qualities with tasks that need to be done, you, as that professional, are connecting with and are perceived to be connecting with the individual when you do something like go for a walk or engage in something more than just sitting across the desk from somebody. It's that connectivity that allows them to overcome. I mean, you're listening well, you're empathic, you're actively
yep,
listening, asking good open-ended questions because you want to hear the stories this person tells, how they tell them, and how it connects with what you're trying to fit. So it's more than just these chemicals, but I love these exercises. I use something else that you have just completed for me, because I knew there was a next thing, and now we're going to be doing.
Yeah. I also think, you know, next time you visit a client, let's say the client's a CEO, and if it's a nice day, suggest, look, it's too nice for us to be cooped up in your office. Can we go for a walk someplace? I find that they're delighted to get out of the office. Mm-hmm. But the symbolism is twofold. One is you took them out of their office. You took them out of a situation where they're not going to get interrupted. And you've changed the power balance. You're the one who initiated, let's get out of your office. And they agreed. Now you're going to be more equal than if you're sitting in the visitor's seat and they're sitting in the power seat in their office. So it's a way of changing the relationships. Some people will be open to it, some people won't. But again, on a nice day like today, a lot of people would like the opportunity to get out of their seat and exercise. So it can help change the relationship. So we've talked about the origins. One is my own practice, observing leaders. Second is Cesar Millan's popular show, The Dog Whisperers. Third is a behavioral science research article that I read. Fourth is the whole psycholinguistics of getting people calm, the use of probability statements, and then finally Amy Cuddy's research at Harvard University on neurochemistry. We've tied this to behavioral science. We've talked about scripting, and these are not just for you, but these are something that you, if you have a company or if you have a client, this can be institutionalized. And the idea is, how do you incentivize it? You're not going to get it unless you pay for it. And I've suggested some specific questions that could go into performance evaluation measures so that it can be paid for. And the message I want to leave you, it's not the dollar amount, it's the fact that you care enough to want to pay for this. Yes?
I want to tell you, you know, we've had a lot of speakers here, and I really think you're one of the best ones. You actually exemplify calm, assertive in your presentation. No matter what questions you were throwing, you stay cool, calm, and collective. I'm certified in NLP. I've been for about 18 years, so this, you're ringing my bells on this one. You know.
Thank you very much. Thank
so,
you.
Good job.
Thank you. Also suggested some reference questions you could ask to hire calm, assertive people to work with you. Again, we're looking at non-chemical ways to stimulate the chemicals in your body. I've suggested have a checklist. Just like a captain has a flight plan before they go, they have a checklist before they take off. You have a checklist before you make a sales call, and one of the checklists is, are you going to be using the right statements, probability statements? Are you going to be positioning your body to increase more testosterone in your body? Just put it down as a checklist to do. That your idea about putting putting your briefcase in there and then slamming and it says show's on, I think that's great. It's a signaling device to your brain, says now I'm going to get into this mode. Perfect. Just do it every time. Don't do it when you remember. Don't do it when you feel it's the right time. Put it in a checklist and just check it off. Yes, be careful about decisions that you make when you have been seated for a long time in a position where your body has probably increased its cortisol. Example, it's a 3-hour flight and you're in coach. So what have you been, and now you make a phone call and somebody's asked you to make a decision right then and there. Probably not the right time. Or you just drove from here to Boston. It's a 3-hour drive, and you're on the phone, and then somebody asks you to make a decision. Maybe it's not the right time to be making that decision. Again, the message is the body is complex. Your body posture sends a signal to your brain. Your brain reacts and says, it's got to be a reason he's seated like this. Maybe he's under some tension. Maybe there's a, so be careful about your body posture. Any questions? Again, I'll be glad to give you a 1-hour free consultation by phone if you want to turn some of these ideas into action. If you'd like, I write a monthly piece in Psychology Today magazine called Platform for Success, The Making of Great Leaders. And these are two articles I've written about this subject if you'd like to learn more. Thank you very much.
Yes. Did you have a comment that I read the book Cheryl Steinberg's Lean In.
Yeah.
And she also suggested that in yoga there's a pose or a movement called sun salutations that is sort of embracing the world.
Yep.
And that also has had some positive neurological, biological improvements as well as far as
I'm sure that I'm coming from a sort of tradition of Western oriented neurobiology and psychology. But I'm sure that there's nothing that I've said today that other traditions and other religions are not dealing with in their own way.
Thank you very much, Larry. As Bob LaBrie said, Ace has a lot of speakers and some ring true and some don't, and you obviously have. And so thanks for your attention. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. One thing we didn't